are. I'd like to welcome you all to the Washington Alexandria Architecture Center. I've been a student here since my fourth year of undergrad. It's been a long 4 years, including trips to Japan, Mexico, Portugal, to say the least, and there's just been so many wonderful experiences. I took this shot a few months ago and found that the dimensions of my body fit the arch of the building, and I really feel I really feel that in a way I was able to touch the space and touch everyone that has come close to me. And so I guess let's get started. Yes, I'm going to need to see my screen here simultaneously. So there we are. What I'm going to do, just to explain, is run you through a few files. We're going to close folders, open folders, and run you through the thesis project, almost as a conductor would his symphony. I want to start by introducing my committee. We'll start with my very close friend, Jan Holt, the director of the Alexandria Center. More to be said a little later. Also, my dear friend Susan, who I had the opportunity to travel to both Lisbon, Portugal, and Mexico, and many other travels in between. A man who needs no introduction, Dr. Marco Fiscari, and another very close friend of mine, Mr. Paul Emmons. Do you have anything to say, Paul?
All right, let's get this party started.
Architecture is bringing people together to enjoy a common purpose. Music, architecture, it's all the same desire to come together. And that's what makes this very important for me, that we all enjoy ourselves. Now, aside from that, I'd like to talk about one of the first sketches I made, which is a synesthetic drawing about combining music, architecture, and drawing onto one common stage. My instrument in this case are two guitars and this program Macromedia Flash. And what's happening on this stage? Well, first thing is, I've set the frame rate to move, the graphic frame rate to move to the beat of the music. So that, from there, the rest of the graphics can be composed. There's two Georges, one playing solo guitar, which is the instruction drawn on the top, and the other George playing rhythm guitar. The videos are both taken with the with the tool of the camera, tuned onto one stage and brought together. On the left side, we have the instructions, a detailed view, almost like a detail of an architectural drawing, of the hands of the rhythm player and the hands of the solo player. So this is really where I started to begin to think about how my musical drawing, how my music could be drawn and my architecture could be played. So in a desk crit with Mr. Emmons, and also with Marco Fiscari, asked us to create tarot cards. And I created seven for the seven major notes of the chromatic scale. And Paul asked me, what happens if you listen closely to your parallel bar, to the tone that it makes? And I discovered that as I move my parallel bar across the paper, across the board that there were precise measurements that came from the tones that the parallel bar was giving me. This is the original drawing here, which I invite you all to take a look at later. And the next step I did was to take this drawing into Macromedia and actually put sound to it. So in this way, I could begin to draw my building from proportions that my drawing board gave me. And if there are any questions, by the way, or anything, please, we're all here together, so let's discuss. The next question was, how can I, George, inhabit my building as a scale figure, as a figure in movement? So I made a drawing of myself in a few different stages of movement, walking up, downstairs, walking across the room, walking upstairs. Some of you may have heard of Muldridge, who did photographic, stop action photography. And it's sort of beautiful. If you hit this special Muldridge button, is what I call it, extend these bars, you can kind of get an idea of how the body inhabits, how the body moves through, how the space moves around you. So I took that drawing to the Appalachian Trail. And actually, I thought if I'm going to design a bathhouse on the Appalachian Trail, I might as well walk there. But before we walk there, let me give you a brief just introduction to it. The Appalachian Trail is a 2,100-mile-long uninterrupted pedestrian passage from Springer Mountain, Georgia to Mount Katahdin, Maine. Each year, 100 people walk the entire distance from beginning to end. Where do these people stay? There's camping along the way. There's very minimal accommodations. So in a sense, you have to become part of the surroundings. This is another tune drawing in which, sorry if I can just stop this here. I'm gonna play that again for you actually. What I'd like to mention though is that this is again a tune drawing. This section, every 20 miles, are colors represented in plan as well. So that's every two steps that George takes, each step is 5 miles long. The plan and the section both reveal it at once. I should also just mention where these colors came from. Pythagoras said that colors and sounds are characteristic of distinct wavelengths and separated by intervals. So what he basically did was drew an analogy between the wavelengths of colors as light and the wavelengths of sound as objects in vibratory motion. So let's just review this one more time. And also important to mention is that during my hike, I recorded along the hike some sounds. The sounds you hear are what I was hearing along the way. Also notice that Hot Springs is the only red line in section. This is the lowest point and the first opportunity to get to hot mineral water. Let's approach Hot Springs. Here's a plan of the city, and I thought that the best way to introduce the town to you would be to describe its history. And in Susan's class of the American City last spring or fall, remember? Is it in fall? Yeah, one of those. We were to choose an American city to study, and this was my study. Let's click on the water flows north, separated by Spring Creek and the French Broad. In 1778, the baths were discovered. The first structure to appear was in 1780, Chun's Tavern. And I should mention that this was an old Indian trail that was later converted into a passage to the west, Tennessee. So the line begins to grow, and in 1828, the Superhighway of the South, is what they called it, is formed along the French Broad. The town begins to grow. In 1837, a magnificent bathhouse is built with about 200 rooms right on the peninsula between the two rivers. Rumball, who was the founder of the town, built his home. I have a historic shot in my own shot a few months apart. The railroad reaches town by the Green Line in 1882. So we see a boom very soon after the railroad. In 1884, the Patton Hotel burns to the ground. But 2 years later, a new and larger and very elegant hot springs bath is built, the Mountain Park Hotel. And at this moment, the town changes its name from Warm Springs to Hot Springs because there was a discovery of a warmer bath. And upon this warmer bath, the new bathhouse was built. I have another drawing here. This is the Mountain Park Hotel bathhouse. And we'll be flipping through this drawing in time in a moment as I reveal the next sections of the next photographs of later times. So let's continue in time. 1914, we see a downfall in the U.S. economy, the World War, the Mountain Park Hotel burns, and we're sort of left with a lost identity for the town until 1937, when the Appalachian Trail Red Line was mapped to pass through the town, and it passes right down Main Street. Still back at the same plan, and why don't we take a fly through?
Born on the mountain of the south, dreamed and dreamed in the land of the free, raised in the woods, only knew every tree, killed him a bar when he was only three. Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier.
That, of course, is a bluegrass song reminiscent of this region. It's called Davy Crockett. So here we are overlooking the town of Hot Springs. This was a beautiful moment for me because for 4 days I was in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park and I hadn't been to a town yet. So I took a photograph and it happens to match the 3D view I took. But even more special, I took a trip. Oh man, that was not right. So here we are back again, and let's take a look at this summer image. As I was saying, it's really beautiful. Let's take a look at this tree on the right and take a trip over to the winter season. Look at the same image. with the movement of the mouse.
And if you want to learn how to do this, you can take my flash class.
Did you see him? The commercial in the middle of the movie system.
This piece is brought to you by.
Yes. So drop down. And pretty soon we'll be arriving on Main Street. And why don't we take a walk down Main Street? Climb up Lover's Leap, but before we do, let's get to that commercial Susan was talking about. Thank you. We have a wonderful little coffee shop that I must have spent all my pocket change at, but it's a wonderful little place called Misha's, and I'm going to grab a cup of this sometime. So, back to the thesis. Here's a panoramic in 3D Viz. It's one of my instruments that I use. My camera is also an instrument, so I took a few photographs and composed them over the 3D view. And when I went back in the winter time, I took another image. You can see the two setting suns. Let's take a look at the rest of the panoramic and take a closer look into the town. This is early morning, July, mid-July. We zoom in. This is our bathhouse, and it's located on the peninsula, as I mentioned. This is the French Broad River. And these are the ruins. This is probably a good time to introduce to you what it looks like and how it's looking in the past. So as I mentioned, this is the bathhouse in the late 1800s. I don't remember what button I used to program the canvas. There we are, okay. This is what it looked like in the 1940s. Summertime. And last, September, this area, the region was flooded by Hurricane Ivan. And I'd always, you know, it always puzzled me why the front of the bathhouse, actually the whole committee, we were wondering, why on earth did they build this thing with a 45-degree angle on the front? And it happens to be because during the 10 or 20-year floods, the ship actually turns into the bow of a boat. It cuts the water of the river and sends the water around. Okay, sorry, folks. Here is a USGS satellite image, a town taken in 1978. It pretty much looks very similar. Let's zoom in to my own drawing, made in AutoCAD. Remember, George was walking down Main Street here about 5 minutes ago. Maybe if we zoom in, we might be able to catch him. Oh, there he is. Okay. So we're walking down Main Street, and we have some original Paul Lemon dashed lines representing my footsteps as I approach the site. So once again, the perspective and the plan are tuned, revealing one and the same. Just before George gets to the site, I want to show you a really beautiful character on the site, which is this beautiful suspension bridge. It was built in 1990 when the site was being used as a golf course, and there were golf carts rolling across Spring Creek to the driving range here. So we move on. Let's see if we can catch George down here. Oh, there he is. Okay, we can zoom in. Better look at him. And we're approaching the bathroom. Yes.
The button's not working. It's very embarrassing. Hello.
Hi,
how are you doing, George?
Good.
Oh, not too bad. Just trying to defend my master's thesis here. Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good idea. Okay. Do you have that ready or what? So, let's take a look at the bats. Around the perimeter of the site are these personal, small, modern bats in which mineral spring water is pumped into from the site. So there's a disconnection from the actual ruins. The ruins are not used in the present time. And the mineral spring water is pumped in, as I mentioned, from the well. And on its way out, it's returned to nature into two of the surrounding rivers, to Spring Creek or the mighty French Broad. The source of the water is this well here, which we'll take a look at and plan in a moment. I think that's it for that file, guys. So. Say this every time I open it because I really like it. This is the existing site section of the ruins. Perhaps I should make this full screen. And last December, I had the idea that perhaps I would defend with these drawings. I don't think that's a very good idea, so my committee talked me into perhaps staying around one more month and squaring things away and perhaps arriving at a architectural, perhaps. But the way this was drawn was by taking the proportions that I mentioned earlier from my drafting board and bringing them right into plan. And there was a beautiful, actually magical moment that happened when I realized that the E-tuning of the Do or the C actually matched the width of the at quarter scale. So, I said, cool, let's build with these guys. Let's build with these babies. And I took from the drawing and onto the section in model and began building the chord. The C, the G, once again represented in colors by the feathers, the F, which is the green, yellow E, and the orange D. You see, musicians and musicians are lucky because we have this built-in, preordained universal harmonic series. And this is the physical form of that harmonic series in a truss. So I took those proportions and said, you know, we can't stick with that form. We're going to have to switch things around here a little bit. And I ended up with these chords. And these became the final formal forms for what would instruct the final design, which we'll talk about in a moment. But let's talk about how I built the thing, because a month ago, I didn't know much of the details. So I had to take this from my plan into model and begin playing with it. This is actually also a very beautiful view. I like the way the plan meets the perspective of the model. So I began building off the model on the fly. I had a few ideas.
And I believe it's the responsibility of the architect to tell the complete story to others so that others can learn from every step of development. It would be a shame if I were to sit up here and speak about the final design, because there was a long journey in arriving there. And the way I thought I could best describe this would be by tuning the plan of the model, the section of the model, and the drawings in one drawing. And this required a certain discipline to say that at each of these steps of the music, I would have to stop and record all of them and finally compose them in the end. So we begin with the existing. And pressing on my little right button here, we move over to the excavation. And the first thing that happens is that along the pools, along the perimeter of the pools, there's a stepping down. So that the water pouring out and heading out to the river would step out back to the river. On the south side of the building, there's excavation for the supply line to run in from the well. The water enters in and steps down. At the moment where the excavation, so we won't talk about water quite yet. Let's go forward. The next step is to dig the footings. And the footings are dug here, here, and you can't see them in that section. Continue along. The next trade, or the next musician to play on the building, is the foundation. He pours the concrete footings in place, tuned and prepared to receive the timber frame. And the last trade is plumbing, which enters here. Now let's talk about this in a little more detail. Would you prefer to talk hard copy or on the screen?
Screen.
So we have five, I should say, that there are eight pools, eight separate baths, and they are separated by five footings, columns, cross-braced. The roof, as you can see in the model, is made of glass, and this is actually a very important section that as the hot water rises from the baths, there is a relief or a separation between the glass panels so that the water escaping can meet the rain as it drops. There is a rest and relaxation room in the rear, and this is a covered section that runs all the way to the river to accommodate camping. Basically, what we've done is begun with this old structure, not touch the old building at all, dug a few holes, and ran water back through it again. There's another drawing that I don't recall where I placed it. That's a little important. So one more, just to speak about the section that the bather will enter. Personal area, drop his backpack, and I approach the water. It feels warm, so I decide to walk in. Once again, my drawings. And I sit here long enough to watch a steam drop rise. And I remember my trip to Japan and the friends I made there.
I remember trips to Mexico with my friends from Iraq. That's our faculty on the left. I remember playing music on the rooftop, and I remember my family. And as I sit there relaxing and remembering the past year, the raindrop, the steam rises, and it climbs through my building, through the world I've made. And it rises far enough to the roof, where at the same moment the raindrop falls. And they fall together on my glass panels and come together, meet, and drop through the building. End and I find I'm only back at the beginning again, right where we started. And that there are four very special people that are responsible for this project. And my development here as a person, as an architect, as a musician, as a friend, Mr. Jan Holt, Susan Peanut and Palladino, Marco Foscari, and Mr. Emmons, Paul. And actually, there's a few other people who are responsible for bringing it here. And there's actually a few more people I should thank here, and then we'll get to questions. But I'd like to thank Karen Iglesias for helping me very early on in the development. You're a true friend. Alan Sullivan, we wouldn't have gone down the CNO if it wasn't for your ride to the top. Rich Gallagher, Leo, Shane Pomahomo, who started this whole flash mess. Natalia, Lauren Baker, and Elma. Thank you. lights, please. Let's talk about some details. I'll get the ball rolling. John Foote is a dear friend of mine, teaches the design build course here at class. This is the Macrinos brick mold. It's a building unit for my building. And we had a wonderful opportunity to build our own brick molds. I thought I'd build my own. And that is the Macrinos brick mold. And I actually would like to give this as a gift to Susan and her husband Douglas to take home. I've been a heavy one to carry. So that's for you to take. And I'll
carry it.
There is some mineral water here from the spring that I brought back. Feel free to have a sip. It tastes wonderful. I know I'll be drinking some later. We can all partake of the waters of hot springs.
Drawings, which supposedly they are moving you through the building in the way first they started flying you, but of course then you got your stomach. But the problem is this rendering that it doesn't show anything, which is something that I would like to point out, but by using two words, titles and icons. Since you are you Greek Orthodox? No, absolutely. So you know what an icon I mean, not the one you click on the computer. And I think the problem of the icon is that you see what it will look like, but you don't know behind it. In the sense that you see an image, but you don't see behind the image. You don't see the construction of the wall, you don't see the making of the building. And the presentation is these surfaces, which the guy said, oh gosh, that is going to be the building of my corporation, but he doesn't know what he's getting there. What is good about some of the part of your presentation is that you are taking people behind the scene, like an icon does, takes you in another dimension of the building, so that there is this possibility of walking in the plane and the section at the same time, which is much more important than walking in a pseudo perspective of the building. And I think that is really your major contribution in the thesis as a presentation, which is a unique way of dealing with what architecture does. Like you said, you know, I have to show the footing. Then you got into trade data, and to make people to understand what is the trade of making the building. And that became really the way you build the model, the way you tell the story, is part of this game. So I think that is really the key contribution. The other stuff on the top is flashy, and it's practically flashy.
I think also using the flash as an architectural tool rather than just as a sort of entertainment media. I mean, the last, I'm looking at the section with the water at the bottom, and the sort of last sequence of showing the red dot rise up, meet the blue dot. And I know we all, you know, we all had that conversation about the two waters meeting, and each of us in our own imagination pictured how that might happen. But it's a really different problem to actually illustrate the spirit of how that happens. And it's something that can't be done in a static drawing, and it's quite a challenge to really show it. It's easy after you to
to describe it verbally, so that then someone forms an image in their mind. But it was really quite amazing to see that happen. Of course, again, manipulating color as a signifier, where the red and blue come together, you get a purple drop, and the purple drop falls back mediated. And to me, that was really a sort of beautiful way of using the medium to talk about the experience of a place in a way that a static drawing can't do and a simple CAD drawing can't do. And also that the sort of fly through and 3D model is equally as static, because it actually doesn't involve any of those items. And of course, the contemplation, the thought bubbles, the association was quite nice. But to me, that one was really the moment where the technology of this really looking at architecture through a digital medium gets past just the whiz bang of it and actually uses it to express something entirely different. Very nice. That was my favorite part. After the Mishas.
I was wondering if there's some way you could also anticipate the future of the building, because you talked about its past and you animated its present, but as this building also becomes part of the history of this site, if there's some way you can think about the weathering of the project through the way you present the information.
Going back to what Marco and Susan were saying, the difficulty in drawings in the modern idiom is that they don't actually concentrate on the architectural issue of why this building is has a reality which is worth spending the effort to make. So when you see the water evaporating, reaching the glass tiles, and meeting the water that has rained, you are actually explaining why architecture is necessary to make in order to make life poetic. It isn't and at the same time you see a section of the materials, see the water, the foundations, all the parts that contribute to the reality, which is actually the pleasure of seeing that the two waters meet and return back to the ground. You're presenting it in an architectural, what would be a good word? It's an architectural poem. It isn't a poem of presentation. This presentation is not sufficient to present architecture. Especially the section drawing, you feel like you're in the presence of architecture, and it's worth making the glass roof, and it's worth waiting for the rain, and that moment for which you have spent all that effort, and actually you get back much more than you ever spent. And that's, of course, the wonder of architecture, that you always get back more than you've spent. And that's why it will always be with us, like music. Think of the effort to learn to play years and to play the same piece again and again and again. All that effort, because when you have the piece, you get back more than you invest.